Like, have you been watching any of that stuff on social media? Like, people doing that and busting their butts and everything?
It's horrifying.
Horrifying is right. It really is.
It is horrifying. The amount of alcohol that I would need to consume to even try it would make it impossible for me to get past the first two steps.
Yeah, I'm not going to be trying that anytime soon. Certainly not.
The face at the end is beautiful. That's the face that you would have after about 45 minutes of the all those types of things drinking game with you taking the drink.
Oh, man, look at that one.
I got the earbuds on.
That's back in the day of, like, COVID when I'm at home doing, technical difficulties. Like, what the hell? What's wrong with my internet?
You didn't say what the hell.
Yes, I did.
Let me say this, though. Do not do the milk crate challenge. It is inherently dangerous. People have gotten seriously injured. The old disclaimer, do not try this at home. Do not try this anywhere. Do not do it. And the good thing that TikTok did about it, they stopped posting the videos. Good, because people were getting horribly injured because milk crates were not meant to be climbed like steps to a pyramid. You literally will be climbing a stairway to heaven or possibly hell if you try to climb up those things, because you could die from it. All right, on that happy note, let's pivot to the AFC East win totals, courtesy of our friends at the PointsBet Sportsbook. Buffalo, over under of 11.5. I may have had one opinion last week after watching your boy Blue Chris against the Packers on Saturday. I probably feel a lot differently now about the Bills. There were some signs of dysfunction thanks to the whole anti-vaccine thing among so many of their players. But Josh Allen is still Josh Allen, and if anything, he looks better. Give me the over. That's an easy one.
I think so, too. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm expecting last year 13-3 or 14-3 this year or something like that, but I have a hard time with Josh Allen. And, you know, they do have a pretty tough schedule. It's different that way. This one's close to me, but I'm going to go over here as well. I am. You know, the one thing I guess that scares me is a little bit of the start of the year. You see that. It's three really good defenses right off the bat. But Allen is so special, and I feel like he has gotten to that Mahomes, Rodgers type of thing where if you're just not absolutely dominating them, he can find a way to beat you and win the football game. So I'm going to go slightly over here too. I'm thinking like 12-5 with the Bills. I do worry about, how dominant their defense can be. But I think overall, I'm just too confident in Josh Allen, the offense, and all of that goes with that I can't pick the under. I'm going over.
Yeah, I have to go over. I saw looming, though, a date with the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. We've said previously this year that if the Bills are really going to crash the party, if they're going to prove that they're ready, they've got to get past the Chiefs. They've got to show that they can beat the Chiefs, and they get another opportunity to do it. They were 0-2 last year. Remember how uninspiring they were? It was one of those games that got moved around into a weird time slot. I think it was a Monday night doubleheader or something like that. But it was a weird night in Buffalo. It was rainy. It was windy. The Bills' offense just wasn't there. That's the thing about the Bills' offense. From time to time, it just disappears. Doesn't happen often, but because it's so good when it's there and it's clicking, when they can't get it going, it's so much more glaring, isn't it? Like against Baltimore in the postseason.
Well,
when they finally did wake it up, but then they hit the Chiefs, and there are times where it just feels like it's not there.
Well, that's what I think worries me a little bit about them. I expect the division in the AFCs to be better, for sure. I mean, New England's going to be better. New England almost beat them last year up in Buffalo. I mean, Cam Newton fumbled on the 10-yard line. Remember going in? You're thinking, uh-oh. Patriots might, pull off the upset. But the point you're making, yes, it's a little too Josh Allen-centric at times. And that's where, I do worry about them. And that's where I'm like on the bubble with that 11.5 there. I don't know if I could just see them ripping off as many wins as last year, especially, with the schedule that we just brought up there. Teams have studied them, what they do. They're going to be a little bit better feel within division and how they play. From that aspect, that is what I do worry about. We've seen them struggle, right? You said the Chiefs last year, the Ravens, the Tennessee Titans, teams that, I'll say the Ravens and the Tennessee Titans, who had
knowledge of the offense. Vrabel from New England, Daboll from New England. Ravens, they've always been on the New England thing from Dean Pease's years there and all that. So they know a lot of those rules, which, of course, you know, hurt the Bills a little bit. But, yeah, I'm going to go over just because of the talent with Josh Allen. I'm not necessarily saying, like, I think the team is just absolutely the best team in the AFC.
Yeah, they do have work to do to get to the Super Bowl, but they continue to be the best team in the division, although it will be a little more difficult this year because, number one, it's not a surprise this year for the other teams in the division. They've had opportunities to go against this new-look Bills offense that runs through Josh Allen, but I still think they will go over. And remember, there are 17 games this year, so 12-5. That is still so weird to think of. For 40 years, you think 12-4, 11-5, 10-6. We still have to reprogram our brains in that regard. All right, New England's over-under win total, 9.5. Mac Jones is the quarterback. These numbers haven't moved much because Mac Jones is now the guy over Cam Newton. The question is the guys around the quarterback. Last year, not enough good guys around the quarterback, especially on offense. This year, they've improved. Chris, I'm inclined to go over. I think the Patriots are going to the playoffs this year. I thought it with Cam. I think it with Mac. I just think that the talent has increased to the level where when you throw in the greatest coach of all time in any sport, on top of it, you're going to cobble together enough wins. With 17 chances, you're going to get enough wins to get to the playoffs.
I'm going over, too. I am, you know, the defense, first off, they made all the right moves. I wouldn't be shocked if New England's defense is the number one rated defense in football when it's all over. I mean, we got big people, tons of secondary people. We'll see when Stephon Gilmore gets back. Of course, that stinks that he's not out there. But, man, they got a lot of good corners anyways. And I think they'll be able to play a little bit of a different style of defense this year because they finally have some big people and some pass rushers up front. You know, they've been a little like handcuffed the last few years because of we got to crowd the box and the line of scrimmage. And then because we're not big and don't have any playmakers up there to where we have to play man-to-man on the back end. So I could see that changing a little bit. But I'm with you, Mike. You know, I just think it's too well-built of a football team. I don't care about the rookie or not. Mac Jones is better than – you know, Matt Castle was taking over, and he went 11-5. You know, so I just look at New England being too good, and that's what kind of affected me with that Bills decision, where I'm like, Bills 11.5. I mean, I could see them being at 11, you know, or 12, either way. But I think this division lends it to thinking, man, they could have three teams in the playoffs for sure.
Right on the heels of the New England Patriots with an over-under of 9 wins. Again, the Patriots at 9.5 are the Miami Dolphins. They felt like a playoff team last year. Remember, they had that great Saturday night win in late December when Ryan Fitzpatrick was getting the exorcist treatment with his head spun around and threw the pass and extended it, and they ultimately couldn't get it done. This year, again, an extra game, an extra chance, extra opportunity to qualify. You've talked about them as a playoff team. Are you going over 9 wins, under, or are you going to go push and say 9-8 and maybe 9-8 is good enough?
I am going to go over. I am. I mean, I push is certainly in that discussion, but the one thing, yeah, you said it. The Dolphins, to me, in the preseason just got the look. They played really good football. I do think Tua looks like a different football player altogether. The Jalen Waddle aspect at wide receiver, you know, they have a real niche for him within the offense. And we know he can fly and he's got two rockets up his butt. But also, he's going to be their Julian Edelman, Wes Welker guy too. So they're going to have him. If they get Devontae Parker to stay healthy with Preston Williams and Gesicki at tight end, you just go, geez. You know, offensive line, you know, they're obviously not totally happy with it, but they got a lot of depth and it should be pretty good. And defensively, they should be top-notch too with good coaching. So I have a hard time saying under here. Yeah, I'm going with the over. And 10-7, I certainly could see that from the Miami Dolphins, and maybe even better.
I'll go right on 9. I think 9-8. I still think they have work to do. I hope Tua steps up and plays like Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow. Let's see. Let's see where the Dolphins are. And also, let's see what happens with Deshaun Watson, because they may be willing to take a short-term step back in the name of being a potential Super Bowl contender starting next year. And that really is the question. Hey, are we going to tread water here, get to the playoffs, lose in the wild card round to one of these great teams, or are we going to try to lay the foundation for being one of the great teams as soon as next year, and maybe this year if they get the deal done soon enough to get Deshaun Watson, if that's what they want to do. New York Jets, over under 5.5 wins. I had the Jets in my good vibes draft. You had the Jets in your bad vibes draft. You're looking at the injuries like to Carl Lawson and Jared Davis. I'm looking at the presence of Robert Saleh as the head coach, Zach Wilson as a quarterback. So where are you on win total? Will they be 6-11 or better, or 5-12 or worse?
I'm going 5-12 and worse. I am. With that division, you know, they're playing the NFC South and the AFC South, the AFC East this year. The injuries you just talked about, like, listen, I'm with you all the way with the vibes of Saleh and Zach Wilson and all that goes with that. But, you know, the injuries are real. It's a team and a roster that's still being built. There's some new pieces, some younger guys that are all coming along that way. Like, I think the future's bright. You know I love the kid, Zach Wilson. I mean, it's going to be laser beam shows. But, hey, this year for the Jets is just establish a culture, get things going in the right direction. You're not going to win the division. Don't get Zach Wilson hurt and put him in vulnerable positions. Don't Joe Burrow him, because that's my new phrase. Don't Joe Burrow him. Don't, like, oh, we're down by 17 and our quarterback, we can't protect our quarterback, but we're still going to drop back 45 times and try to win the game. No, Saleh's just, he won't do that. He's too smart, I think. And I'm going under, though, because of just, you know, the circumstances I already laid out.
You know, I have noticed, and I may have to go back and check the tape for the exact verbiage that you used, but you're trying to carve out a different way of saying all those types of things. It's drink. It doesn't that ding time. Joe Boone
needs
a refill.
Twice in this segment I've done it. I've used another phrase while I was going down the road of using the old phrase.
All right, let's take a break. Cam Newton's release wasn't the only big transaction yesterday. We look at some others with a game of which doesn't belong and why. More PFT Live right after this.
I can't wait to see what Kafusi does in Buffalo this year. But anyway, if you didn't know Morgan was from Ashwaubenon, did you?
Aaron Rodgers likes Jake Kumerow, likes Bronson Kafalsi. Kafalsi out of the Green Bay Packers, even though Rodgers has previously praised him. Oh, well, that's how it works. And we'll await the next Aaron Rodgers press conference for comment there. A little which doesn't belong and why. Let's start with veterans placed on the PUP list. Chris, physically unable to perform. Now, that means they were on the active PUP list from the start of camp. You have to make a decision at cutdown day. Do you put them on the active roster, or do you put them on the reserve PUP list where they have to miss a minimum of 6 weeks before they're eligible to return to practice? The three candidates, Michael Thomas of the Saints, David Bakhtiari of the Packers, Stephon Gilmore of the Patriots, which doesn't belong and why?
I'm going to go with Stephon Gilmore. I mean, one, he's, you know, an NFL defensive MVP. He's a huge part of that football team. Unlike the other ones with Bakhtiari and Michael Thomas, this is a contract issue. To me, this is what it looks like more than anything. I don't know what the injury is, if it's really real or whatever. So I just think there's more angles here. Like, the other ones are plain and simple. Michael Thomas, yeah, waited too long to get surgery. Bakhtiari, you know, tore his ACL, preparing for the NFC Championship game. You know, Gilmore... We've heard all those things throughout the offseason and all that. So that's the one that doesn't belong to me.
Yeah, this is the quietest hold-in that we've seen so far this year, and it's actually going to extend 6 weeks into the regular season because of the injury status. And if it isn't really an injury, both sides are committed to the ruse to the point where they leave him on the PUP list for 6 weeks of the regular season. Go ahead.
I was going to say, did they make a deal where they were like, you know, we might not pay you more, so hey, you don't have to play as many games. Here you go.
You only have to play 11 games.
I know. I don't know. It's just, it's odd to me for sure. I haven't heard anybody that really knows the story throughout the NFL of what's really going on there.
Yeah, that's because you're never going to get the full story as it relates to anything regarding the New England Patriots. I'm going to say Thomas doesn't belong because it just feels like, despite the fact that he and Sean Payton got together and worked out their differences, I think the differences were too deep and profound and had lasted too long for one meeting to solve it.
Yeah.
I think those two sides are destined for a divorce, whether this year or next year. Next year, a Julio Jones type of trade, June 1 is going to be easier to accomplish from a cap standpoint, but it just feels like it's moving in that direction where Thomas is not going to be long for the New Orleans Saints, and I think there's more acrimony there than there is between Gilmore and the Patriots. Yeah. All right. Receivers of note who got released: Breshad Perriman by the Lions, Travis Fulgham of the Eagles, and John Brown of the Raiders. Which doesn't belong and why?
I'm going to go with Travis Fulgham here. I mean, Travis Fulgham, first off, is like a practice squad journeyman, you know, who I do still think has like potential to kind of carve out a niche with a team that, you know, is looking for a fourth receiver on their roster. You know, John Brown, you've heard me say, used to drive me crazy last year when everybody was like, oh, all the weapons they got. John Brown, I want to go, there's a reason this is the fourth team in four years. It's not what it was. It's not the old John Brown, you know. And then, of course, Breshad Perriman has never lived up to expectations that way. Fulgham's got size. We could see, like, when it comes to the game and whatever else, that size comes in handy. He's just got a good feel for football. He doesn't, like, wow you, but I'll go with him, and I would think somebody picks him up to round out their receiving core.
Yeah, I'll go with the same guy because he actually played for the team that cut him. The other two guys were just signed this year by the team that decided it didn't work. They know what Fulgham can do, and he was one of the few bright spots last year. Now, things changed as the year went on. But that one surprises me, and that makes it different. And I do think he may have some potential if he lands in the right spot. And who knows? Maybe he lands with Carson Wentz in Indianapolis, especially with T.Y. Hilton dealing with a neck problem injury, that's going to knock him out for potentially the whole season. They hope it's not the whole season, but potentially it could be. All right, which doesn't belong and why? Vikings moves. Everson Griffin cut. Jake Browning, unvaccinated quarterback. Oh, wait, no, he was the one who was vaccinated. Excuse me. Cut, and they traded for tight end Chris Herndon with Irv Smith injured. Which doesn't belong and why?
I guess I go Everson Griffin here. I mean, just because there was such a big deal made about, you know, the signing, and you thought maybe, hey, they know something we don't, and maybe he's got a little bit more left in the tank. You know, it's also, yeah, it's odd that they just signed him, and, you know, yeah, he had to deal with the Kirk Cousins apology and all that stuff, and then here he is, you know, a week later, he's out the door. I think this is probably about the end for Everson Griffin when it comes down to it. We might not see him again, but he had a really damn good career.
Well, and I'll say this, he doesn't belong in my mind because this is possibly a game that's being played by the Vikings to kick the can for a little period of time, like with Brian Hoyer out in New England.
Yeah,
you need 53 guys on the roster. Right. You got to put a guy in injured reserve. And it may be with Everson Griffin. Now, it's not like they're paying him huge money, but we hear this every year. Vested veterans, cut before week one.
That's right.
Re-signed after week one, because after week one, their full salary is not, as a practical matter, guaranteed. That's a reason to do it. Although, it seems like every year, guys are cut for that reason, and then week one comes and goes, and they never get signed. It's like, it's just a way to make them feel better because you're kicking them to the curb. Oh, we'll get back to you after week one, and then they just never do. But it could be with Griffin because he had a decent game against the Chiefs on Friday night, had a sack, had another quarterback hit. He's going to be a situational player for the Vikings. I don't think you go through all that last week if you don't have him in your plans. I won't be surprised if he's back. All right, backup quarterbacks who made the roster, which doesn't belong and why. Cooper Rush in Dallas, Josh Rosen with the Falcons, and Tyler Huntley in Baltimore.
Well, Tyler Huntley is the one that doesn't belong because I'm going to go, well, who the hell else are they going to have as a backup quarterback? I mean, you know, yeah, we could say something about all these guys. Huntley, you know, he looks solid in the preseason. He's a good athlete. You know, he got pretty good control of the football. You see right here. So, I mean, there's no other options. McSorley's hurt. He's gone. So, I'm going to go with Huntley here. I mean, and he continues to show growth at the quarterback position. Pretty damn good play right there to go back, you know, across your body, touchdown pass. So, that did not surprise me at all. When I heard that, oh, yeah, Huntley made the roster, I want to be like, of course he did.
Well, Lamar Jackson said himself after that Washington game when he accounted for 5 touchdowns, I'm glad I don't have to go against this guy. Well, you don't, at least for now, because he's your backup. And look, if you have a quarterback who's going to be running the ball and in harm's way, and credit to Lamar Jackson, we've seen it for 3 years now, and he's yet to have a serious injury other than that incident with cramps on the Monday night last year against the Cleveland Browns. But if he does get injured, you need to have somebody who can play. And based on what we saw from Tyler Huntley, he can. I'll say Rosen doesn't belong because he's the top 10 pick. He's the guy, and I think that Rosen was attracted to Atlanta because of Arthur Smith, who did what for Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah, sure.
A failed top 10 pick. Resurrected his career. I'm not going to start drawing comparisons between Josh Rosen and Ryan Tannehill, but Josh Rosen just didn't suddenly forget how to play football. It didn't work in Arizona because they wanted Kyler Murray. It didn't work in Miami. And last year, he just kind of floated around. And you know what? It was a smart move to hitch his wagon to Kyle Shanahan. He didn't know they were going to go out and trade up and get Trey Lance and become irrelevant as far as Rosen was concerned. So he's got a chance. He's got a chance. You know, I kind of root for this unconventional path where a guy comes in as a top 10 pick. It doesn't work. But through persistence, hard work, determination, he eventually creates an opportunity for himself. That would be a hell of a story if it happens.
It would be. We'll see where it goes. You know, he still throws a beautiful football. I mean, for not knowing an offense, he did very well the other night in the Sunday night football game. And, I mean, he's put himself – but what I'm getting the point here is, man, he's putting himself in a lot of situations. I mean, he was in Tampa. And then, you know – in San Francisco, like you said, and now here in Atlanta, where hey, he's you know, I would think gonna be right there with Felipe Franks as far as a guy they think about if they got to pull somebody off the bench and Matt Ryan does get hurt. Felipe Franks did well. I hear what you're saying, Mike. It's gonna be interesting to see where his career goes from here.
Yeah, and you know, in Dallas, look, Garrett Gilbert's gone, Ben DiNucci's gone, Cooper Rush is there, and it very well could be that last year they had Andy Dalton and they needed him and they still went 6-10 and they've just decided
to hell with it.
The hell with it.
Yeah.
We're going to go all in with Dak Prescott. If it doesn't work, it doesn't matter who plays quarterback. We are screwed anyway. Sorry, London. Let's take a break. When we return, today's draft, Offensive Rookie of the Year candidates. Now that the deck has been reshuffled with Mac Jones becoming a week one starter, we'll do that next here on Pro Football Talk Live. Rookie of the Year odds before and after the decision to cut Cam Newton. Mac Jones climbs from plus 800, that means bet 100 to win 800, to plus 450, which means you win a lot less for your 100 bucks. And others drop accordingly. Trevor Lawrence, his odds go up because of Jones. Zach Wilson goes from plus 500 to plus 600. A couple didn't change, like Justin Fields and Trey Lance. First, we have to see how much they're going to play. Other guys also going up in the aftermath of the Mac Jones news. So, with all that said, Offensive Rookie of the Year draft for today. Christopher, you have the trivia question. And let me just peel back the curtain here. Pete said to me during the break that you can go ahead and look at the trivia question.
What a bunch of bull crap that was by Pete. What a bunch of bull crap.
But I knew, but wait a minute, wait a minute. I instantly knew the answer.
That's
I said
great.
I know the answer.
We don't
and,
do that.
And
it's,
then
it's
I get,
9,000
like,
shows
oh,
in a row.
It.
We don't do
you're
it.
You're Googling it. Baloney.
I'm not worried about you Googling
it. See it.
I'm not worried. I don't want you thinking the pressure of live TV can make you choke. We've seen it before.
I knew it immediately.
Okay. So you want it before.
And all
three
those types
Vikings
of
receivers
things.
Have won offense of the rookie year of the year. Name them Mike. Mike named them. He knows them. Great. Good. Good.
Sammy White, 1976. Randy Moss, 1998. Percy Harvin, 2009.
Pete, shut your
Next
mouth.
Next time,
okay?
Give me something hard to sell.
Go ahead. Okay. Pick your pick, jerk.
All right. I'm going Najee Harris. That's your best value on the board. Pull that board up again. Because running backs get the ball in their hands, and this guy's going to be a three-down back, and he's going to be on the field. You want to make $1,000 for your 100 in jurisdictions where those types of things are permissible, and we encourage you to bet responsibly. Najee Harris is your guy, in my view.
I mean, you just picked the Patriots to go to the playoffs, and Mac Jones is the starting
doesn't
quarterback.
Doesn't mean he's going to... That doesn't, but doesn't mean it's going to be
the biggest thing in the world.
Passing yards.
It's
fine, go ahead and take him.
Yeah, I am. I'm taking Mac Jones. That's just low-hanging fruit. Of course I am.
You just picked Cam Newton to be the starting quarterback 2 days ago, and now you're taking Mac Jones to be the rookie of the year. Make up your mind.
Seriously. Yeah. I think that they have a really good football team around him. I'm with you. I think they're a playoff team, whether it was Mac Jones or Cam Newton. And I think his stats will be good enough along with the wins that, yeah, it's all going to lead to him winning the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I think that will help.
Yeah, right.
I think that will help, but he's going to have the numbers. Yeah. You know who's going to have the numbers? Because here's what happened. And not that anybody cares about anyone's fantasy team, but I'm explaining the thought process to you.
Yes.
My son is in our barn league, and he took a flyer on Zach Wilson, and after Mac Jones became the starter, and he's available because nobody drafted him because nobody thought he was going to be the quarterback.
Right.
Or if he is, he's not going to have big numbers. My son's like, should I drop Wilson for Jones? I said, I still think Wilson's going to have bigger numbers. I think Wilson's going to have the bigger year. They may go 5-12,
yeah, right.
But I think Wilson's going to have the bigger year. Now, will it help Wilson? And that's my next pick, to be rookie of the year if the team is bad. Well, it didn't hurt Justin Herbert last year. What were the Chargers? Pete, 6-10?
9-7. They're 7-9.
Okay, well, yeah. Never mind. Well, okay, they're under 500. They're underwater.
Yeah.
And he still won rookie of the year.
That's right.
I think that Zach Wilson and I was influenced by your assessment of him before the draft, and I've watched him. He's awesome.
Yeah.
And he's playing for a New York team, and he's going to be great. And the rest of the team may not be. They may be in a lot of 44-41 games, but I think there's going to be enough buzz there.
Yeah.
And I'll take him after Najee Harris.
I don't think it's crazy, Mike. I mean, he was on my short list, too. You're right. You don't have to have a good record if he makes enough, like, jaw-dropping wow plays, even, like, I mean, well, he brings them back in the fourth quarter and they still lose or something like that. We're all still going to go, man, Zach Wilson's amazing in that game. So I'm with you there. I mean, I'm expecting big things from him too. And I think, you know, at the very least, got to, you know, with Elijah Moore, Jameson Crowder, you know, Corey Davis, he's got a fighting chance at least at receiver there to have some weapons and people that can get open. So I hear you there all the way. I'm not mad at that pick at all. I probably would have taken it myself. All right. I'm going to go with Jaylen Waddle as my next one. Jaylen Waddle has looked, like we talked about with the Dolphins earlier in the AFC segment, has looked really good. I think it's a offense that fits him. Of course, he's got that Edelman Welker thing that you heard me talk about, yet he's got an extra rocket up his butt that those two didn't have either. So it's not going to just be like, oh, he just does the over-the-middle short stuff. He's going to get his chances to go deep down the field too. And They seem like they're going to put him back there to return punts to go along with it. So I think with that, he could be a kind of guy that has good stats, a few splash plays. If they make the playoffs, I'll go Jaylen Waddle.
You know, I thought about going with Dyami Brown just to troll you because that's one of your
he looks good
season star guys, and he does look good. Yeah. And the odds for him are plus 6,000. So you could make a little bit of extra scratch for the holidays, although you won't find out until, well, it'll be for St. Valentine's Day by the time we get the answer. But I'll go Kyle Pitts.
Yeah.
I will. Plus 1,200 for Kyle Pitts. And talked to Matt Ryan earlier this week. You'll see the interview get posted at PFT. He, you know, Pitts is going to fill that void created by the departure of Julio Jones. A tight end has never won Rookie of the Year, Pete tells me. But you know what? We're going to start hearing that over and over again, and that may create some buzz because he's not really a tight end. And if he has huge numbers in that Falcons offense with Arthur Smith and Calvin Ridley's there to take some of the attention away from him if he comes out great, it kind of reminds me, and this is the attitude that a lot of defensive coaches have with rookie pass catchers generally, you got to prove that you're good before we start game planning to stop you.
Yeah, that's
and
right,
and maybe
too.
He will.
Yeah.
And they loved him. They loved him at number four, and he was a guy that there was so much buzz about going into the draft, so I'm excited to see what he does, and I make him my third pick. Who do you have?
I mean, he would have been my third pick as well. I mean, he looks like still like the freak show he looked like in Florida. I mean, we saw that play the other night where he caught the ball on the right sideline and ran up the field. I mean, come on. That does not look like a guy that's 245 pounds. I can tell you that. He does. He looks a lot like Megatron out there in his uniform too. So, man, you know what's crazy? The one thing that preparing for the draft, I think there's less like candidates for this than I feel like in normal years. You know, there's not as many like because DeVonta Smith, I know how good he is, but I just don't know about the passing offense with Jalen Hurts and how awesome they'll be and everything that goes there. So, I'm going to go.
And all those types of things.
I was about to say it, yes.
I know you were.
I know.
I now know when you're ready to say it and you pivot to something else.
Ramondre Stevenson could get a ton of touchdowns, but I'm going to go with Javonte Williams of the Denver Broncos. Melvin Ooh. Gordon's had an injury history. You know, the Teddy Bridgewater quarterback, they think their defense is good. Williams looked really good in the preseason. I think he's a guy that, yeah, could get his share of stats and touchdowns and kind of be a force within that offense. So I'll go Javonte Williams, the Denver Broncos.
It's plus 2,200 for Williams. So there are our picks for offensive rookie of the year. Trevor Lawrence is the favorite, and none of us took him. I think we both are concerned, Chris, that the Jaguars aren't going to be very good.
Just the team itself, right. It's not about
Trevor
Lawrence.
If the Jaguars aren't, right. If they're not very good, it's going to be very hard to be the Offensive Rookie of the Year. If anything, maybe Trevor Lawrence will challenge with a 17th game the Peyton Manning all-time rookie interception mark. And I know that every year Peyton has his fingers crossed that somebody is going to catch and break the record he set in 1998 when Randy Moss was the Rookie of the Year. Let's take a break. When we return, some updates on the Saints, including what Sean Payton had to say about new starter Jameis Winston and what they're going to be doing with up to a month away from New Orleans as they get into the season. We'll talk about that next on PFT Live. So Bill Belichick had a press conference this morning during the show, Chris, and he was asked if vaccination status factored into the decision to cut Cam, and he said no. And everyone believes him.
Taking the bait.
Maybe people haven't had their coffee yet. Look, folks, 9 days ago he said Cam is the starter. What happened between now and then? He wasn't available. Why? Because he had a COVID misunderstanding. Maybe he didn't cut him because he wasn't vaccinated. He cut him because he can't follow the rules of an unvaccinated player. You can't count on him. If you can't count on him, he can't be the starter. And if he can't be the starter, you don't want him on the team. So I call BS. Yeah. He just said 9 days ago he's the starter, and he just said yesterday he's moving in the right direction. All right, the Saints out of Louisiana for up to a month, potentially in the aftermath of Hurricane Ida. Power out in New Orleans indefinitely. Sean Payton, the coach of the team, said they are planning to be away for an entire month. They're going to practice at TCU, Texas Christian University, beginning next week. Chris, they got a home game week one against the Packers, and we don't know where it's going to be played.
It's amazing. I mean, just what a curveball to be thrown at your football team at this time of the year. Wow, is that a lot to overcome? I just know as a player myself, that's torture. I mean, you're out of your home, out of your routine. That's hard to overcome that. What a gift for the Packers. You don't have to go down to the Superdome and deal with that fan base there, you know, right on week one. That's amazing. The other thing I'll say too, Mike, just to wrap it up here, you know, the good thing is their schedule, you know, they missed the home opener against the Packers, but then their next home game isn't until October 3rd. So hopefully things can get, you know, organized in time to where they don't have to miss any more home games other than that first one.
There's a question as to whether or not they can play at AT&T Stadium for that opening Sunday of the season. The Cowboys are out of town. There is a Los Buques concert, and I didn't know who Los Buques were until a week or two ago because they were turning SoFi Stadium around for two nights with Los Buques.
Is that real?
As it turns out, yes, it is. It's a Mexican group that was founded in the 70s. It's on a reunion tour, and they are selling out stadiums all over the country. Two nights at Soldier Field, two nights at SoFi. They'll be at AT&T Stadium, but that concert's not until Wednesday night, so you could pull it off with the Sunday game.
Group?
So they got started in the 70s.
Okay, yeah, I had never heard of them. Yeah, I've never heard of them either. Yes.
Matt Casey was at SoFi doing the Super Bowl survey because NBC's got the game, and he sent the picture of how they were putting the plywood out there by hand on top of the turf, and it's like, well, I wonder what they got going on. It's like Los Buques. What's a Los Buques? So that's what Los Buques are.
What does that mean?
September,
you know, in Spanish?
Los I have Buques? No idea. No. It means the Buques. September 15, they will be at AT&T Stadium. Look for the Saints and the Packers to be there on Sunday, September 12. I think that's what's going to land. And you know what Jerry's attitude is, Chris? Let's have everything we can.
Oh, definitely.
At AT&T Stadium.
Definitely. Yes, you're right. He won't be mad. More tickets, more money for him. Sounds good. Let's do it.
All right, tomorrow we will have a listening party with the Los Buques' most recent album, if there was one. I don't know that there was one. I'm going to go down a Los Buques wormhole on Google right now. Everybody have a great day. See you tomorrow.